Feminist ear can be how you hear what is not being heard. Silence when you can hear what has not been said. In the transformation of silence into language and action, it is vitally necessary to teach by living and speaking those truths which we believe and know beyond understanding. Because in this way alone we can survive.
Prison and jails are places of silencing, spaces where communication with the outside world gets interrupted or even made impossible. As a disciplinary tool, prison hides and silences what is unwanted in society, forms and lives of otherness that are restricted and locked away. Deviant languages and sounds are being silenced, and thereby hegemonic language gets reinforced over and over again. We have chosen a few women who have been politically active and therefore imprisoned, and who have spoken or written about sound and silence in jail over silence by state violence. Where there is silencing, other forms of communication grow. We have been trying to collect examples of such languages that emerged under repressive conditions. Trying to listen to what is not being heard is an act of ongoing complicity within these processes of giving voice and taking voice. There is no safety.
Telepathically shifted, I am here connected to the unnamed, not the unknown. We know her as Onushiruke in three of the Nigerian languages for to be silenced. Her story wasn't meant to start with this newspaper article. Her story was forced to end there, forced to be untold, to be without the sound of her own. Let us take a closer look onto how media and law constructed this silencing. In the title, you are named as the dead woman. In the subtitle, you are named as a rejected asylum seeker. Demandeur d'asile rejeté, rejected, illegalized, rejected to be criminalized. Rejeté, illégalisé, être criminalisé. As narrated in the readmission agreements within Swiss asylum law, from refuge to asylum application, to rejected, to negotiated deportation. Here, at this point in the article, you describe no longer in a legal terminology. You are named the Nigerian woman. Did you behave as a woman? Did you act as a Nigerian? Moreover, there is this hidden meaning behind the words. After the prison guards found you motionless on the cell floor early in the morning, they described the attempt of an immediate help performance through reanimation. But the doctor who was called could only state the death of the rejected asylum seeker. First, they point out the humanity of the prison authority. Then they, at the same time, determine you according to the legal paragraphs as a rejected asylum seeker. Like this, they blur the failure of their responsibility to protect you. Is this the construction to approach your death without collective empathy? Who are they? Who wrote this article? Are they? Are they us? Are they me, we, they, you? According to the police, you behaved suspiciously. Suspicious airport, illegal person check, rejected asylum, imprisonment. While searching your reverberation, I'm wondering what was happening that night and the days before. The answer of the prosecution department to my request, according to the principle of public access, was as follows. The cause of death is unclear.
but there are no indication of third-party interventions. Since it is a so-called extraordinary death, there was no formal criminal procedure. In these proceedings, no information is ever published for reasons of personality protection. 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 The imagination of your echo. Fragile memories. Only witnessed by the silent walls of the prison.
Of a criminal association. She was incarcerated in Cologne-Ossendorf prison in an isolation cell located in a special isolated wing where no sounds from the outside or inside could be heard and no one could be seen. Meinhof was excluded from prison activities, was not allowed contact with other prisoners, and was subjected to visual controls by male guards through a peephole every 15 minutes. In 1976, before the trial in Stammheim concluded, Meinhof was found hanged in her prison cell. I came across the liner notes on Roberta Settl's Meinhof in Memoriam Music in Crisis record.
When there is nothing else to listen to silence, isolation in a twofold sense. Listen, sounds from far away and from inside oneself. The state of mind after years of solitary confinement when the borderline between real and imaginary sound, remembered and anticipated sound is no longer clear. Meinhof in memoriam, silenced.
Boiling water that
will scold him for life, disfigure him. Raging aggression for which there is no outlet, that's the worst. The clear awareness that you don't have a hope of surviving. The utter failure to communicate that. Visits leave no trace. Half an hour later, you can only mechanically reconstruct whether the visit took place today or last week. But having a bath once a week means thawing for a moment and can last a few hours. The feeling that time and space are encapsulated within each other.
The feeling of being in a room of distorting mirrors, staggering afterwards, terrifying euphoria that you're hearing something. Terrifying euphoria that you're hearing something. Besides the acoustic difference between day and night, the feeling that time is flowing away, that your brain is expanding again, that your spinal column is slipping back down for weeks, the feeling that you've been flayed.
Bitte? Mikrofon?
Ja.
Mikrofon?
Ja. Ich weiß gar nicht, warum Sie hier so hysterisch darauf reagieren. Dass wir Sie ablehnen, weil Sie ein Gericht sind, das foltert. Also erstens, der BGH stellt fest, dass es Isolation gibt. Zweitens, dass Isolation Folter ist. Und drittens, dass Folter in der Bundesrepublik rechtens ist. Und das alles im Gegensatz dazu, dass 3,5 Jahre lang mit einem enormen publizistischen Aufwand bestritten worden ist. Dass es Isolation gibt, zweitens Isolation Folter ist und drittens allerdings noch bestritten werden musste, dass das rechtens sei, weil es das bis jetzt nicht war. Aber das ist noch nicht alles, was der BGH rauslässt. Er behauptet, die staatlichen Organe seien zur Anwendung dieser Haftbedingungen durch unser Verhalten gezwungen worden.
Frau Meinhof, bitte, es richtet sich der Antrag gegen die Richter dieses Senats.
Er richtet sich gegen Sie aufgrund des BGH-Beschlusses und der Wahrheiten, die der BGH-Beschluss rauslässt.
Sie können
und das
uns,
bin ich jetzt dabei, auseinanderzunehmen.
Nicht, Sie können uns nicht aus Gründen
ab... Sie schweifen jetzt wirklich ab. Sie haben der Mandantin das Wort erteilt und die Rede geht zur Sache.
Behauptet, die staatlichen Organe seien zur Anwendung dieser Haftbedingungen durch unser Verhalten gezwungen worden. Wir würden die Ordnung in der Haftanstalt stören. Ist absurd. Wie, wann, wo? Wie sollten wir jemals die Ordnung in der Haftanstalt gestört haben, wo wir nie, exakt noch nie in 3,5 Jahren mit anderen Gefangenen als Gefangenen aus der RAF im Gefängnis gesprochen haben? Die Frage ist, wie kann ein isolierter Gefangener den Justizbehörden zu erkennen geben, angenommen, dass er es wollte, dass er sein Verhalten geändert hat. Wie? Wie kann er das in einer Situation, in der bereits jede, absolut jede Lebensäußerung unterbunden ist? Das heißt, im Gefangenen in der Isolation bleibt, um zu signalisieren, dass sich sein Verhalten geändert hat. Überhaupt nur eine Möglichkeit. Und das ist der Verrat. Eine andere Möglichkeit, sein Verhalten zu ändern, auf das der Bundesgerichtshof stützt, dass wir isoliert werden, hat der isolierte Gefangene nicht. Das heißt, es gibt in der Isolation exakt zwei Möglichkeiten. Entweder...
Sie Frau Meinhof, es ist kein Zusammenhang mehr zum Ablehnungsantrag
entweder
zu sehen.
Bringt einen Gefangenen
bitte,
zum Schreiben, zum Schweigen, das heißt, man stirbt daran,
Frau
oder Sie bringt
Meinhof
einen zum Reden und das ist das Geständnis und der Verrat. Und so, an der Realität gemessen, hat der Bundesgerichtshof beschlossen, eine klare und definitive Aussage, dass es Folter, exakt Folter durch Isolation gibt, definiert an diesem Zweck, Geständnisse zu erpressen, den Gefangenen einzuschüchtern, um ihn zu bestrafen und um ihn zu verwirren. Das ist das Geständnis des BGH-Beschlusses.
Ich entziehe Ihnen hiermit das Wort, weil Sie nicht auf den Sachzusammenhang, nämlich einen Ablehnungsantrag gegen...
Definieren Sie mal was Abschweifung.
Darf ich jetzt meine Begründung, wenn ich es dazu sagen? Oder ist das bei Ihnen auch schon nicht mehr üblich?
They
seem to have with us is that our political consciousness apparently doesn't leave our bodies without that, what you would call life, leaves it too. It is clear why it is so, because its content is collectivity, anti-isolation. When our identity is our political consciousness, whose content is collectivity, then they can't rip it out with isolation, without killing. I hear every single sound in the entire place. The drips of water, the sound of people's footsteps, the sound of chit-chat off in the distance from the guards. It was a very empty prison.
Jesse Manning is a former United States Army soldier who was convicted of disclosing 750,000 classified and unclassified but sensitive diplomatic and military documents to WikiLeaks in 2013. In a statement she released the day after her trial, she declared that she wished to be called Chelsea Manning as she identified as female since her early childhood. She declared that she wished to begin hormone therapy, which she only received after 2 years of imprisonment, and she was not allowed to grow her hair longer during this time period.
Prison keeps us isolated, but sometimes sisterhood can bring us together. When a prison tried to break one of us, we all stood up. Prisons function by isolating those of us who are incarcerated from any means of support other than those charged with keeping us imprisoned. First, they physically isolate us from the outside world and those in it who love us. Then, they work to divide prisoners from one another by inculcating our distrust in one another. I've got two Marines watching me at all times. I'm sitting up straight. I can't lay down from 5 a.m. till 7 p.m. I can't sit down. I can't lay down. I can't lean back on anything. I'm sitting upright. Sometimes have my glasses, sometimes don't. I don't have much clothing. I hear every single sound in the entire place. The drips of water, the sound of people's footsteps, the sounds of chit-chat off in a distance from the guards. It was a very empty prison. Healthcare is something that prisoners have a right to, you know? They don't get to pick and choose whether or not you get this healthcare plan or another. It's provided to you by the prison. The prison has a responsibility to provide you with necessary healthcare, and trans healthcare is necessary, because if we don't get our treatment, we die.
The sentence handed down, the longest ever for spilling classified information.
They overcharged and they overreacted.
And tried to turn it into the case of the century.
Set the whistleblowers free!
At first, the military denied Manning's request for medical treatment for her gender transition.
What would you say to those who feel that taxpayers shouldn't be paying for hormone treatments?
Healthcare is something that prisoners have a right to. Trans healthcare is necessary.
In what way is trans healthcare necessary?
It keeps me alive. I just want the pain to stop. It keeps me alive.
It's not cosmetic. It is not experimental. It
keeps me alive. I used to get these horrible feelings like I just want to rip my body apart. The pain of not knowing. It's a very dark place.
And then to make matters worse, she was sent to solitary confinement.
For her own protection.
The prison said that she interfered with the good order and discipline of the prison by attempting to kill herself is just a horrendous thought if you think about it.
She was punished for trying to survive, and then she was punished for trying to die.
The pain of not knowing.
If you think about it.
Punished for trying to survive.
A men's military prison.
If you think about it.
And then she was punished for trying to die.
For her own protection.
Like, I just want to rip my body apart. Rip my body apart. Rip my body apart. Rip my body apart. My body apart. Rip, rip my body apart. 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 My body. My body. My body.
There's a, I would phrase it, you know, as a white gay assimilationist push to think about single issues rather than about liberation for all of us.
My body. My body.
What happens to our bodies?
My body.
What happens to our bodies?
My body.
What happens to our bodies? What happens to our bodies? I want to know what happens to our bodies.
I was convicted in a trial that can only be described as a legal lynching. In 1979, I was able to escape with the aid of some of my fellow comrades. I saw this as a necessary step, not only because I was innocent of the charges against me, but because I knew that the racist legal system in the United States, I would receive no justice. I was also afraid that I would be murdered in prison. I later arrived in Cuba, where I am currently living in exile as a political refugee. Why, I wonder, do I warrant such attention? What do I represent that is such a threat?
It's horrendous, the extent to which the repression associated with the era of the late 1960s and 1970s continues to this day.
What do I represent that is such a threat?
Asada Shakur is a former member of the Black Liberation Army. She was arrested in a shootout with state troopers in which several men were killed and she herself was shot. She was afterwards convicted of the murder of one of the involved policemen in a trial that has been repeatedly called unfair. She spent 2 years imprisoned until she was freed by a group of Black Liberation Army members. She fled to Cuba, where she received political asylum and has lived there ever since. The U.S., and especially the Trump administration, is still referring to her as a terrorist and cop killer and calls on Cuba to have her returned. In her autobiography, Asada, she writes about her grandmother dreaming of her escape.
Locked by the lawless, handcuffed by the haters, gagged by the greedy, and if I know anything at all, it's that the wall is just a wall and nothing more at all. It can be broken down.
My grandmother came all the way from North Carolina. She came to tell me about her dream. My grandmother had been dreaming all of her life, and the dreams have come true. She dreams of people passing and babies being born and people being free, but it is never specific. Redbirds sitting on fences, rainbows at sunset, conversations with people long gone. My grandmother's dreams have always come when they were needed and have always meant what we needed them to mean. She told us what we needed to be told and made us believe it like nobody else could have. She did her part. The rest was up to us. We had to make it real. Dreams and reality are opposite. Action synthesizes them.
Dreams and reality are opposites. Action synthesizes them. Dreams and reality are opposites. Action synthesizes them.
You're coming home soon, my grandmother told me, catching my eyes and staring down into them. I don't know when it will be, but you're coming home. You're getting out of here. It won't be too long, though. It will be much less time than you've already been here. I know it will happen because I dreamt it. You're getting out of this place, and I know it. That's all there is to it. Rational thinking could diminish the high that I felt. I literally danced in my cell, singing Feet Don't Fail Me Now. I sang the feet part real low, so I guess the guards must have thought I was bugging out, stomping around my cage, singing Feet, Feet, Feet. It had become a habit of sorts. Anytime I am faced with something difficult or almost impossible, I chant. Over the years, I have developed different kinds of chants, but I always fall back on the old one. I can, I can, yes, I can.
Feet. Feet don't fail me now. Feet don't fail me now.
At this point, I think that it is important to make one thing very clear. I have advocated, and I still advocate, revolutionary changes in the structure and in the principles that govern the United States. I advocate self-determination for my people and for all oppressed peoples. I advocate an end to capitalist exploitation, the abolition of racist policies, the eradication of sexism, and the elimination of political repression. If that is a crime, then I am totally guilty.
The communication they built, with an improvised Morse alphabet, was the key to their salvation. The fingers were drumming, and that's how they conquered their right to their voice, which had been taken from them. Through the walls, they gave each other strength and comfort. They discussed and shared experiences and delusions, humans and phantoms, memories and dreams. Within this music of small drums sounded the wonder of the universe. It was forbidden for the mouth, therefore the fingers spoke. They spoke the actual language which is born from the necessity to speak.
Llegás, te tiran un uniforme, te dicen un número y ahí terminaste. Te convertiste en un número.
Si vos podés proyectarte y mirarlo desde arriba, pongamos desde fuera de vos, era un campo de concentración donde todas estábamos vestidas de gris, donde trataban de quitarte la individualidad, donde trataban de que vos no fueras vos, que fueras un número. Donde trataban de que te incomunicaras, no podías comunicarte con otro sector ni con otras compañeras, mismo entre nosotros, muchas veces nos sancionaba. Si vos lo ves así, era espantoso. No sé cómo podíamos vivirlo o cómo pudimos hacerlo.
I'm reading about the early 60s and 70s in Uruguay. At that time, an economic crisis led to labor unrest and student militancy. The left-wing urban guerrilla group Tupamaros began by staging the robbing of banks, gun clubs, and other businesses, then distributing stolen food and money among the poor in Montevideo. Later on, the Tupamaros sought to redress the country's rising rates of inflation, unemployment, and bureaucratic corruption through violent insurrection. During the civic military dictatorship, Uruguay became known as the torture chamber of Latin America. Over 6,000 mostly left-wing people were held as political prisoners. Approximately 28% of the political prisoners during this period were women, many of them Tupamaras, mostly in their 20s.
One day they suddenly shut all doors. At the outside area of the prison, where we took our little walks, they installed huge, huge high wooden boards, so we couldn't see the horizon no more. In front of all the windows, they installed green plastic cover panels. It had the effect of a fishbowl. It had changed the color of the wool, the drawings and paintings we made, the pages of the books, the faces, our dresses, everything was green. For years, we couldn't see the sky nor open any window.
Lo más importante para nosotros era no ser destruida mentalmente, no ser destruida psicológicamente y no ser destruida, sobre todo, ideológicamente.
We women didn't even get involved in certain discussions which would have separated us. The most important thing for us was the unity of the prisoners. In fact, just 10 out of 700 or 800 compañeras collaborated with the military. I also learned to read and write with the help of a compañera. She painted on a nectarine that she used as a globe to explain the world to me. Information is power. In the end, we shared everything that came in through the visits with each compañera. In this way, we could estimate the news that came from the outside.
Montevideo.
La noche en Montevideo
está tranquila y no está.
Se están jugando los tupas, uno a uno del penal. Penal de Punta Carreta, del muro salto de piedra, custodiado por soldados, todos armados a guerra.
Guerra muerte a los presos, guerrilla en la oscuridad,
guerrilla la luz del sol, guerra en la profundidad. La profundidad los mira, uno por uno pasar, codo a codo, pie, con rumbo a la libertad. Codo a codo, pie, con rumbo a la libertad.
When we took initiatives in the prison, there were only two alternatives. They had to either kill or accept us. These initiatives always happened collectively. That was our defense strategy. One example is the story of the forced labor. The prison work wasn't necessary for us as a way of communication, since we could do without it. We developed different strategies to communicate between the sectors. We had learned some sort of sign language and communicated with hands when we could see each other through the bars. Then we also had a language in which we would talk through songs or, if the situation got very serious, through shouts and screaming.
We could also drive the militaries crazy if we would suddenly all scream at once. Once they had sprayed tear gas and we started to scream so much that the warden got completely desperate and said, "The only thing I could do with these women would be to rip their vocal cords out. I can't bear it anymore." He could only let us scream.
Lo más importante para nosotros era no ser destruida mentalmente, no ser destruida psicológicamente y no ser destruida sobre todo ideológicamente.
Information plays an essential role in prisons, or more precisely disinformation. In Punta del Rieles there was a network of loudspeakers. We called them idiots because they played military marches in full volume all day long. Sometimes they also tuned in to news of a riot station. Sometimes it was so unbearable with those devices that we smashed them.
De pronto empiezo a oír voces de mujeres que cantaban La Varsoviana. Y yo dije, estoy loca. Porque imagínate, después de casi un año de rodar por aquellos cosas horribles del cuartel de la Paloma y de todas las cosas, llegar al penal y que te canten La Varsoviana.
I remember as they brought me to a feared military, and a soldier that was escorting me said, "Look, Peticita, you endured everything until now and didn't sing. If you want to sing, then sing tango, because you're good at that." To survive, I always invented things, spoke in a loud voice, invented poetry, chatted with my parents, or just sang a lot. Despite the torture, I sang tango.
Silence is oppressive. Silence is resistant. Silence is simultaneously oppression and resistant. Silence is sanctuary. Silence is restorative. Silence is liberating. Silence is free. Silence is partial. Silence is shared. Silence is language.
The Tupamaras tell the following story about a bird in their cell. One time, a hummingbird came and built his nest between the bars. From then on, we didn't clean there anymore, as to not drive him off. We had him there for 3 months. He was part of our cell. I never would have thought that I ever would like a hummingbird so much, but he was life for us.
Thank you.
Rosa Luxemburg, too, listens and talks to birds and connects to her animal surroundings during the time of isolation. It makes me believe she could talk to and understand her bird companions. Rosa Luxemburg was a revolutionary socialist and Marxist theorist. She was imprisoned several times in Germany and Poland for her political activities. In 1919, she was one of the founders, along with Karl Liebknecht, of the German Communist Party. She was shot dead in January 1919 by a member of the Freikorps and thrown into Berlin's Landwehr Channel. Her letters from prison show her extraordinary connection to animals and, moreover, to birds. There is a meaning, even in the universal silence which has followed the clamor of the early spring. I know that if I'm still here in the autumn, as I probably shall be, all my friends will come back to seek food at my window. Already I can rejoice at the return of this bird called the blue tit, which is a special friend of mine. Thus passing out of my cell in all directions are fine threads connecting me with thousands of creatures, great and small, whose doings react upon me to arouse disquiet, pain, and self-reproach. You yourself, too, belong to this company of birds and beasts to which my nature throbs responsive. Now I have myself grown to be like King Solomon. I too can understand the language of birds and beasts. Not, of course, as if they were using articulate speech, but I understand the most varied shades of meaning and of feeling conveyed by their tones. Only to the rude ear of one who is quite indifferent does the song of a bird seem always the same. Those who love birds and beasts, those who have a sympathetic understanding, can perceive great diversity of expression and can recognize a complete language. Why are there blue tits in the world? I really don't know, but I'm glad that there are, and it is sweet to me when a hasty CCB sounds suddenly from beyond the wall. I suppose I must be out of sorts to feel everything so deeply. Sometimes, however, it seems to me that I am not really a human being at all, but like a bird or a beast in human form. I feel so much more at home, even in a scrap of garden like the one here, and still more in the meadows when the grass is humming with bees than at one of our party congresses. I can say that to you, for you will not promptly suspect me of treason to socialism. You know that I really hope to die at my post, in a street fight or in prison. But my innermost personality belongs more to my tomtits than to the comrades.
Chelsea Manning, too, tells of her connection to a bird during solitary confinement. A couple of days later, we spent an hour sitting on a park bench. The skies were bruised, but the air was warm and fragrant. A flock of pigeons nearby. Manning cawed at them. She told me that at Leavenworth, not long before she learned of her commutation, a robin had alighted at her window, small messenger from the world outside. Hadn't it been a sign? She had taken it as one.
Silence is oppressive. Silence is resistance. Silence is simultaneously oppression and resistance. Silence is sanctuary. Silence is restorative. Silence is liberating. Silence is free. Silence is a partial. Silence.
system is not broken. It's actually highly effective.
The vast majority of those behind bars are people of color, and virtually all of those behind bars are poor.
The system is not broken. It's actually highly effective.
The U.S., which is really responsible for offering imprisonment as punishment to the rest of the world. This, incidentally, was a very important element of the democracy. Prisons are perhaps the quintessential democratic institution.
We now have the most drone strikes, the most terrifying domestic surveillance, the most racist militarized police, the most immigrants deported, most brown people criminalized and murdered by cops or locked in prisons and detention centers.
What we want to do is make a racist society inclusive by including Latinx people or black people, but it's still a racist society.
Yeah.
Or make the misogynist society inclusive, so forth and so on.
Yeah.
This is the dilemma that, that we confront when we think about punishment. And this is why I think prison abolition is central, not only with respect to the issue of reimagining a punishment system, but reimagining society. Prison abolition
is not about making police and prisons gay friendly.
There's no safety within prisons or jails. They're inherently not safe places.
Prisons aren't safe for anybody.
It's not about making police and prisons gay friendly.
But actually the idea, this idea that prisons should not exist.
Y'all better quiet down.
Free our sisters, free ourselves. And they did that because they knew it was really important to make those kinds of connections, right? Between anti-black racism, police violence, state violence, and the policing of queer and trans people.
Prison abolition
is not about making police and prisons gay friendly.
Prisons aren't safe for anybody.
Prison abolition.
But actually the idea, this idea that prisons should not exist.
Reimagining a punishment system.
Police and prisons are not built to deal with the real harm that happens in our community. They're about controlling and killing our community.
Prison abolition.
It means not just looking at the structures of violence like policing, detention, immigration, jails and prisons, and forced psychiatric institutions, but also figuring out ways that our relationships with each other don't model what the state's logic is about who's disposable, who's expendable.
The silence that happens when violence happens within our own community.
Prison abolition.
It's about how we spend our time together and show up for each other.
Prison abolition.
It means that no one's disposable, no one's expendable. We're not exiling people or punishing people in order to solve our problems.
So in a way, before blackness, the state is never really the welfare state, the good state, the state that takes care of us and protects us, is always the one that is defending itself. Why is it so difficult for us to look at the state and its two faces, the face of justice that is to protect us and the face of law enforcement that it is there to kill us? And I think that blackness, and blackness both as a signifier of raciality and sexuality, here dominating gender, right, subjecting gender to sexuality, is exactly that which exposes these two faces of the state. And the fact that violence, the violence of law enforcement, is indeed what defines the state, because before the black body, the state is ready to kill, to protect itself. So what does it take in terms of our political possibilities? Is it enough just to articulate a sexual racial subject before that state? Does it demand, in addition, a return to a critique of the state from that body? And we return to the state to do what? Demanding recognition, demanding rights. But if law enforcement defines the state, and before the state, that body will be killed, maybe what it demands is the call for the extinction of the state. So do you want to be somebody before the state, to go back to the conversation, or nobody against it? And then what for and at what cost?
How to be a nobody against the state. 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 How to be a nobody against the state.